Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, September 3rd, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. You go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet, or worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for 20 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you do that, before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we help people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. If you have any of those to share with us, we'd appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone. That'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll see it, be able to turn on the microphone, announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. So we have plenty of time for comments and questions today. It is Tuesday, and yesterday I was reading mostly from the book A Walk in the Physical. And I've had a number of different discussions with people related to the same kinds of things that we're talking about in our readings. Area code 678 is a new number for me. Who do we have and how can we support you?
Hi, it's Linda Westman. And I heard you reading the book, and it was really clear and kind of comforting to know the greater reality of who we are. And I was feeling. So much gratitude. I'm calling to thank you for reading that, sharing that.
Well, you're entirely welcome and deserving. I'm glad you're finding these ideas interesting. It isn't something we want to approach as saying, this is the truth and we know this is the truth, and yet we want to play with these things. We want to experiment. We want to see if we can't improve our quality of life experience by entertaining these different ideas and applying them in our lives.
I like the way you say that. Thank you. Yeah. So I'm not even remembering the big points or anything, but it felt good to hear it. Sometimes the wisdom of the technique that you use and share with people, I mean, the knowledge that canceling your goal will, I mean, the audio of that you played from Michael was clear, but in my brain it doesn't slide in that easily as far as what's going on. And I wondered if you could, I mean, I can't repeat it. In other words, I would like to get to the place where I could actually explain how we can drop these old things from our bodies. And he explained it, and I can't repeat it back. So, and I guess what I need to do is study maybe the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? In other words, is there a cliff note?
That's one way to do it. Another way to do it, Linda, is to find that audio or that YouTube video of the one-hour presentation or the three-hour presentation. I think he's got one out there that's like a two-and-a-half-hour presentation of his primary lecture, which is Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And you can listen to it multiple times. The other thing is you can watch the PowerPoint presentation. It's 24 and a half minutes. It was created by Bill Costantino. And you can watch that repeatedly, and it can help you kind of sink into a deeper understanding of the mechanics of how this process might be useful.
Those things I would like to write down so I can follow your instructions right now. So there's a 2.5-hour video of what's happening to me available.
Why Is This Happening to Me Again? If you go to Michael's YouTube channel.
Yep.
If you go to, you know, YouTube and you type in, you know, Michael Rice, R-Y-C-E. And then once you're on his channel, then you can search for, you know, Why Is This Happening to Me Again as a video. And there's well, there's a number of them there that you can choose from. They're about an hour long or an hour and a half long, and you can watch those. And you can also go to his whyagain.org, whyagain.org, and look for the PowerPoint presentation. And there's a PowerPoint that will show up on his YouTube channel, but it will also show up if you search for it, just the word PowerPoint, on his website. And it's a 24-and-a-half-minute video of the how-to, the actual mechanics of the seven-step worksheet process.
It's a 24, what did you say, 20?
24-and-a-half minutes.
Minutes, oh. Now that sounds concise.
And you can watch it. And you can watch it over and over again. And it's an animated, you know, it's a voiceover for a PowerPoint presentation that steps you through all these various concepts like the subconscious and the unconscious and the 9-bit mind and the goal canceling and all that good stuff.
Oh, my gosh. This is just what I needed, Dr. Tim. Wow. Yeah. So that's, you've learned it by using it. And when you said, well, it works for almost anything that's causing a whatever in my mind, I heard you say, and I'm going like, oh, that's amazing. You mean there's something it doesn't work for? And I was very curious about the characteristic of that which it doesn't work. And we're not talking about that. But I was curious. I'll let you know I was curious when I heard you say that. And you're so accurate. You don't tell any fibs. What you just said in describing the reading of the book and the information on it, it's not the end-all be-all, this is the truth. It's just, I love how you said, we're exploring ideas. It's a way to search and find better ways to a more enjoyable life. So you are such a gift for those of us who want to learn to apply this because you have done it. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you think so. I hope it's useful for you. As I'm scrolling down on the YouTube channel, Dr. Michael Rice has a 2-hour and 38-minute workshop titled Why Again Workshop, True Forgiveness, 3-hour, June 11th, 2022. That's the title of that video. And on my feed, the next one below it is a 1-hour version of the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop. So there's all kinds of ways you can get videos that you can watch repeatedly to strengthen your ability to talk about it and pass it along to others if that's your goal.
That is exactly my goal. But actually, what you're giving me is what I could pass on much better than me trying to do it. But, yeah, exactly. I need to know enough to explain why it works. Oh, my goodness. Got it. Yes.
Well, and there's a lot in there. There's a lot of understanding that Dr. Michael Rice has built over the years about what is the actual process of perception that we use to create our experience of life. It creates the pictures in our heads. It creates the meanings we give those pictures. It literally creates filters that screen out certain things. So some of us are standing in a room where something happens and half the people in the room hear and see things we didn't even notice. And a lot of that is happening through a filtering process inside of our own minds.
Mm-hmm.
And there are ways to understand that. Some of that you'll get access to through the PowerPoint that you can listen to repeatedly and get better and better acquainted with. And some of it you'll get by listening or watching those other Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop videos, because even though it's essentially the same material as Dr. Rice is working with it, it never shows up exactly the same twice. There's always some differences that you can learn from or get stimulated by.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Yes.
So is there any other question or comment that we could assist you with today?
Not right now. I was wanting to ask Dr. Rice, about the Bible in Matthew where it says how to love God, and then it says how to love how and you love your neighbor as yourself. But it doesn't specify how to love yourself. It's kind of like, well, you love yourself. Notice how you care about other people around you, and that's how you love yourself? No. So anyway, I wanted to know what the Aramaic Bible had said about that topic. Do you have any ideas?
Yes, yes, absolutely. One of the primary things that's happened over the years is that as Michael Rice has been working with what they learned, what the Aramaic scholars learned by looking at the Kabor's manuscript, what he's come to is that the word love from the ancient Aramaic is not a verb. It's a noun. It's a reference to our true nature. It's a reference to God, light, love, creation itself. It's not something we do to another person or to a thing. Love is this substance of creation that we are made of. It is the creative force that always wants to just expand and grow and be compassionate and loving. And so when they were first talking about this, they didn't understand that. And they would talk the way anybody else would. They would read that scripture verses, you know, love God and love your neighbor as yourself. But the more he dug into what had been uncovered by the Aramaic scholars, the more he realized that the references to love as a verb were false, and that the truth of it is it's an energy. We're talking about an energy. And in an energy field, energy is always moving. It's the stuff you're made of. So then he came across the idea of what is this, and Rachma, as he settled into it, is this filter or gateway over the frontal lobes of your human brain. And as a gateway, it allows the truth of life, this healing energy, this loving energy to enter and be the driving force for your perception. And as a filter, it allows you to see things as they actually are without the distortions that arise if you put in the filter of hostility or the filter of fear.
Uh-huh.
So instead of having that biblical passage read, you know, love God and love your neighbor as yourself, Michael now reads it as have Rachma, have this filter set in your mind, have the gateway open that allows your true nature as this loving energy to be your conscious possession, and then extend that to everyone and everything you think about. So you extend that to yourself, to your neighbor, being anybody you think of, and anytime you think about the create, you extend this loving energy, the loving energy, your true nature. So that then this led Michael to talk about being love, being consciously aware that your true nature is love, being love in the presence of anybody that you think of. So it's just a whole different way to conceptualize and to begin to practice with your thoughts and your energy. So we're not trying to do something to another person when we say we love somebody. What we're trying to do is get more and more consciously aware of our true nature and be able to feel that and extend that to others all the time. To keep, this is one of the phrases that Dr. Michael Rice would use when he first started, when I first encountered him over 20 years ago, he would say, the goal of this work is to reach the place where we are experiencing total, perfect, conscious, active, present love. And he would rattle it off. Total, perfect, conscious, active, present love. I shortened it to the acronym TOPCAP. T-O for total, P for perfect, C for conscious, A for active, P for present love. So the idea is the more you are consciously aware that you are a miracle of life expressing in form, the more you're directly attuned to your true nature and the true nature of those around you, the easier it is for you to act in ways that are healing and nurturing for yourself and everyone else in any given situation. So you might say, this is the highest activity, the most sacred activity you could ever engage in.
This being the total
working to be consciously, right, working to be consciously aware of your true nature as love in each moment.
Oh, my God.
To bring your true conscious awareness into alignment with your true nature as the energy of creation expressing in form. And the Way of Mastery mm-hmm. says something very, very similar. It has a whole thing where it says, please stop trying to convince people that you love them. Stop trying to love anybody. Stop trying to love yourself. At the same time that the Way of Mastery says, please stop trying to convince people that you love them or get them to believe that you love them, it says, please feel free to extend your true nature as love in every interaction with everyone and everything. So the Way of Mastery has the same fundamental understanding that Michael Rice talks about in his lectures, that love is not a verb. It's not something we do to another person. It's the energy of creation. It's the stuff you're made of. It's, as they talk about in various scriptural readings, they say that, you know, God is love. Well, you're part of the creation, so you are love as well.
Yes. Okay.
Does that answer your question about loving yourself, loving your neighbor? It's not something we do. It's something we are.
Yeah. Yes. Very nice. And I have a cousin who went to a seminar with a lot of women from church, and they gathered from many places in the country to learn about the I am, that God is, the seven I am, that so Jesus was all those seven things. And they got all excited about learning those characteristics. And so the I am statement too, how does that intersect with this? How do I combine the power of saying, I am. So we say, I am love in every moment. What you just said is what it is.
I think you answered your own question, right?
If
you can do that from the perspective of asking to be shown then I think you'll get even better results. If you do it from the perspective of creating a pattern of thought that says you believe you are this or that, and then you're pouring a lot of mind energy into your thoughts about a situation, you get one set of results. But when you realize your conscious logical mind and your thoughts about yourself can't even begin to touch your true nature or to even comprehend your true nature, then it makes a lot more sense, instead of deciding what you are, asking to be taught about yourself, about your life as it's expanding, about what is it that gave rise to you.
Uh-huh.
What is your true nature? And there have been spiritual teachers who have rested their entire spiritual teaching practice upon this one question. Who are you? And they ask their students to just constantly dive into that question. What are you? Who are you? What is your true nature? And there are a lot of people who have gone to great lengths of improving their quality of life by living with that active question rather than pretending to know. Does that make sense?
Yes, because it allows you to hear from the wise part of you, instead of, in other words, when you're asking, you're listening, and you're no longer cranking around in your brain, that very limited part of us. Yes, thank you. Although if they're asking a question, maybe they're thinking, trying to answer the question, thinking. But that'll never get you to the deeper answer.
That's right. That's why we talk so often, and you'll hear me quote Rilke, the poet Rilke, R-I-L-K-E, when he says, we must learn to live in the question, in a questioning state. We must learn to live in a question without demanding an answer. Because actually, in the moment when a mind can ask a really good question, that particular mind is incapable of comprehending the answer. If the perfect answer came minutes after you asked a good question, it would sound like gibberish to you. It would sound like a language you didn't speak, or buzzing from some energy dimension that's, you know, two or three notches off of the energy dimension you live in. A mind that can ask a really good question needs to grow and expand and have life experience before it's even capable of comprehending the full answer. Think about a kindergarten student who asks an adult, how do they send rockets to the moon? The perfect answer, the NASA scientists, the physicists, the engineers can give her a recitation, and she won't be able to comprehend it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She'll need years of schooling and life experience and engineering practice before any of it starts to make sense to her.
Right.
In anything but the most rudimentary ways. Does that make sense?
It sure does.
So the same is true for us as full-grown adults. We have no way of comprehending the world in its entirety through our conscious logical mind, which is why the Way of Mastery says, from the first lesson on, this Way of Mastery, the Way of the Heart, is not the Way of the Intellect. The first book of the Way of Mastery is called the Way of the Heart. And it's not about thinking and logicking things through. It's about learning to use an entirely different user interface for life. instead of using your intellect, and as Way of Mastery says, which has just been shoved full of trivialities, but instead of using that as your primary interface with the world, use your wide awake, wide open heart and feel your way into the truth of what works best for you.
Now, where is this taught? Your wide awake, wide open heart. Now, this is such wisdom. That's what Jesus was teaching, right?
Well, that's one way to think about it, yes. And this is being taught, the way we're reading of it now, is through the Way of Mastery. But there are a variety of different spiritual schools and teachers out there basically teaching the same thing.
Right.
Based on the understanding that our conscious logical mind is so limited, it can never wrap itself around our true nature or the true nature of who or what it is that gave rise to us and created us. And so it only makes sense that we have a different way of learning, experiencing, and growing in our lives than the conscious logical mind, because the conscious logical mind just isn't fit for that task.
It just isn't fit. And yet that's what all this religious stuff is. That's, they're not fit for the, you know, all of the dogma and things. Isn't that all mental?
Well, that's one way to think about it, yes.
I mean, that's
that
where I'm coming from.
And the rules and the rituals that men make up don't have the capacity to embrace the complexities of life.
The reality of what it really is.
Or what Michael Rice would call the actuality.
Oh, yeah, actuality.
So he reserves the word reality to refer to the pictures that each of us create in our own mind and how my reality can be dramatically different from yours or anybody else around me.
Yeah.
Because it's only happening inside my mind. And my mind is creating what it wants to show me, and what it then tries to get me to believe is the truth of what's happening outside of me.
Yeah.
So we call that reality, and then we call the truth of life, which is what can be seen and measured and experienced by multiple people at the same time, we call that the actuality. And Michael does that to try and make it clear that there's some people who study the Course in Miracles, they come away with an understanding that says the Course in Miracles is telling them that nothing is real and that there is nothing outside of us, you know, as a human being. And Michael Rice tries diligently in his presentations, especially the ones labeled What is the World from Course in Miracles. He works diligently to get people to understand that the Course in Miracles says, yes, there is an actual world outside of us, and it is dramatically different than the world we create inside our minds. So each of us creates an experience of life that's unique to us, is different from every other person. And that's called reality in Michael Rice's work. And actuality is his word for the absolute truth of what's unfolding. To just to help keep those two things separate and straight.
Thank you. You are just...
A font of information.
There you go. That's it. You've got the words for it. I love it.
Yeah, after more than 20 years of immersing in this work and 13 and a half years of doing the internet show 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, I guess that's a fair statement. I'm a font of information about this stuff. It doesn't mean I have it all right. It doesn't mean that I don't have work to do, but I do have some of this stuff down pretty smoothly, in a way that works pretty well for me as I'm working to increase my preference for the way I experience life.
Increase your preference for the way you
experience life. So life is this flow of energy and activity. As I was talking to you just then, someone went by the window of my office with a very loud gas-powered device, maybe a trimmer, maybe a leaf blower. I don't have any control over that. And yet, I do have a choice about whether or not I choose to ignore it or be grateful for it or generate frustration or resentment about it. And that's what creates my experience of life. The noise doesn't create my experience of life. How I choose to interpret and respond to the noise is what creates my experience of life. And so with these tools that Michael Rice is teaching and Jeannie supports him in teaching, I use these tools to increase my preference for how I experience life. I prefer calm. I prefer joy. I prefer compassion. I prefer it to tension. I prefer it to anger. I prefer it to judgment. And so I use these tools to create an experience of life that I prefer.
Mm-hmm. It sounds so easy. What has helped you to be able to turn your attention from anger or tension or things that you may have observed as a child in your parents or in or your own physical reaction to, wait a minute, this isn't right? What are techniques that help you call attention and realize you had a choice?
Well, the biggest one is the keys to the kingdom. The keys to the kingdom, as listed in the Way of Mastery, are the five words: desire, intention, allowance, and surrender. And the definition they use for desire in that work is, it's the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through me in this moment. So something is keeping my heart beating. Something is digesting my food when I eat it. Something keeps my breath moving even when I'm not thinking about it, even when I'm sleeping. So that energy of life, you might call it God, you might call it love, you might call it creation itself, is constantly there and moving through all of us, just like it moves through the trees and the animals. And so in this work, in the Way of Mastery, in the fifth lesson, they say, here's this energy of desire, this energy of creation. And most of us have been conditioned to ignore it and not slow down and pay attention to it. So the first thing is, I wake up and I practice being aware and asking myself, what do I truly want in this moment? And I practice that until I start to tune into the energy of desire, the energy of the flow of life. Once I start doing that, then I step into the second intention, which is to keep my intention focused on that energy. You might say it, to remind myself of this total, perfect, conscious, active, present love that is my true nature and that's expressing around me. Now, the way I've talked about it lately is to say we all have total, perfect, active, present love all the time. It's our true nature. It's what gives rise to us. We can't ever be separated from our source, etc. But most of us are not consciously aware of it. Most of us have been distracted from it. Or we choose to believe things that are contradictory to that. So we create the illusion of separation. We create the dream that we've been separated from our creator and the flow of life.
Oh, my gosh.
And that we have to do something to get back to God or light or love or have that experience. And
yeah.
The fact of the matter is you can't ever be separated. You never tried. I mean, even if you tried, you were never successful. That's what the Way of Mastery says over and over again. You've never succeeded at being anything other than what you were created to be.
I love that. I love that failure. I never was so happy to be a total failure in what I was trying to do or thinking I was separate. And it can't happen. It's impossible. I love that kind of finality and impossibility. It makes my heart joyful.
Good. And then the next step is you allow. So you tune into the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in each moment. And then you correct the pattern of being distracted. We've all been conditioned into all these different ways to be distracted from what our intention is, and we learn to keep our intention focused on what life is, how we are a part of it, how we have the capacity to extend that loving life energy in every moment. The third thing is we move into allowance. Allowance means using my conscious logical mind to scan for the earliest warning signs of tension or upset or resistance to the flow of life. And as soon as I become aware that I'm resisting something about the flow of life, I take a breath and I step back and I relax and I soften and I move into the space of allowing. I let go of my judgment. I let go of my perception. And I ask to be taught. That puts me in the space of allowance. And what the Way of Mastery says is if you practice doing that, you practice those first three things. You practice asking yourself, what do I truly want? And then just experiencing the shifts of energy that come up. As you might have a thought like, oh, I want some ice cream, or oh, I want to go back to bed. But you're not just doing it to ask what you want so you can go get it. You're practicing asking what you want so you can notice the energy that moves in you as that thought about I want this or I want that arises. It's the energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in each moment that you're looking for. And then once you start tuning into that and you recognize you always have the option to tune into it and to choose whether or not you extend it or you do what it urges you to do or you choose not to because of various other reasons that are available to you in that moment. Now you're in choice about it. You're not at effect of it. You're not being driven by that desire. You get to use it as you make informed decisions about what's best for you and those around you. And then you keep your intention focused on that throughout the day. In other words, you undo the conditioning that's had you so well trained to be distracted.
Yeah.
And then you scan your body for the earliest warning signs that there's tightness or tension or frustration or judgment, and you soften and relax and ask to be taught by life in that moment, rather than assuming that what you're thinking is the truth and needs to be spread out over the face of the earth. If you do those first three things, the next step of the keys to the kingdom begins to unfold, and that is the surrender. That's how you begin to understand that you're not doing any of this. Life is living through you. Life is constantly expanding and expressing in, through, as, and around you. And that fourth key to the kingdom just begins to occur as you practice the first three of tuning into desire, keeping your intention focused on that energy of desire, and then catching the earliest warning signs that you're judging what's unfolding in life and releasing, relaxing, asking to be taught by life. Then that's when surrender develops all by itself. And the awareness that you're not the one creating all of this life, and that life is living you, that you're a part of this magnificent unfolding, the tapestry of life. That starts to dawn as an awareness as you just practice staying focused on the first three steps. So you asked me, you know, you asked me, how does this happen? How have I been doing it? That's how. All of those things, all of the above.
Oh, so clear. Thank you. What a gift you are. Your ability to communicate clearly. Goodness gracious. Wow. You know what? You would never get to be a politician or somebody who's actually leading the people. You are leading the people. You and Michael are leading those people who want to learn how to have this heaven here now. You're teaching us. Thank you.
Well,
and
I'm
providing
glad
you
think
the
so.
Tools. Oh,
I hope
my
it's
goodness.
Working for you. And the other thing, of course, is more and more and more breathing and tapping and doing worksheets, because we all have stuff, not just the stuff that's occurred since we were born, but we all have stuff that's come from our bloodline that is, you might call it our baggage. It's our resonant energies that we will get the chance to deal with them. And that's what the specific tools are there for. The reality management worksheet, the three early memories of conflict, the codependence to interdependence worksheet, the mind goal management worksheet. The list goes on and on and on.
Yeah, tools that work. Are there study groups all over using these tools and supporting each other?
Did you just ask that question? Did you say, are there? Or were you making a definitive statement?
No. I am not connected with the groups that are using these tools. I'm connected with you right now. And I went to a month-long program. So I've had some basic training. But it wasn't knocked in to my brain. My brain is pretty stubborn, I think more than the average one, and I'm here now. Hey, so what I want to know is, are there groups of people using all of these sheets on a regular basis? But, of course, you've got the radio show. This is the group. Everybody
who
listens.
Well, there's that, and there's also the support groups that are run. And I don't know how much you've been around for this internet show, but on a regular basis we talk about the support groups. And Susan Bingham has a support group. I think hers runs on a Wednesday morning. We have a support group that runs on a Tuesday and Thursday evening. There are others. I know that there are people over in Europe that have one. There's a book study group. Yenka has one that Michael and Jeannie participate in. There are people that run Way of Mastery support groups. They study that work, and they do it. Usually these days, they do it a hybrid, so they do online and in person. I know there's one that's done on a regular basis in Woodstock, Illinois, but it's also available through Zoom. And that happens on a Saturday where they go through the Way of Mastery and read, I forget how quickly they go through it. It might be one lesson a month and then have discussion. I think they do two discussion groups each month, so it's an every other week thing. But that's, I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you know, there are other people doing similar work, and Jeannie would probably has a list of the support groups that she's been made aware of that are on the website.
Uh-huh, got it.
So you could send her a request, and she can send you the direct link to how to find that on the website.
Uh-huh, excellent. Yeah.
Where are you located?
Kalispell, Montana, the northwest corner of the United States, almost. Washington is next to us. But we are an hour and a half from Canada, and it is a very familiar to me because I'm from Upper Michigan, and when I was here in spring 5 years ago, it felt just like home. So I decided I would move here. It was the time. And I'm quite happy here. And I'm gathering together things that I've learned, but I wasn't able to communicate what I had learned, which you are communicating so clearly. But you know, when you learn things, it's what you do on a daily basis, what you just said about the tuning in. And oh, I asked myself this morning getting up, what do you want to do right now? What is just, but I didn't have step two and three about keeping my attention focused on this energy or desire. And then noticing when I have distractions, like I'm judging something or someone and feeling my body tightness or holding my breath. And then at that point, like when you said tapping, what do you mean by tapping? You mean
EFT,
emotional freedom technique?
The emotional freedom technique, tapping. The person I use most for that and refer people to is Brad Yates. And there's two interviews that he did with me for the On Your Mind podcast, and you can find it on onyourmindpodcast.org. You can also find him on YouTube or Tapping with Brad. He's got his own website. He's got hundreds and hundreds of YouTube videos with him tapping on various things. So I routinely refer people to Tapping with Brad these days because he stays very close to the original, and people frequently say, oh my gosh, Dr. Tim, it's like, you know, doing the worksheets or doing a tapping with you. It just feels so similar. And the reason for that is because both Brad and I have chosen to stay very close to what Gary Craig created and then venture out from it, but always coming back to the basics so that people can get access to how to do that for free online.
Uh-huh.
Through either Gary Craig's website or Brad Yates's YouTube site, et cetera.
I had a friend who had, he said that this shortened form where he just tapped on the alternate with his arms crossed in front of him, he tapped on alternate upper arms below the shoulders, just back and forth. And he said that could release fear as well as doing all of the specific points. But I'm aware that those are important points for the meridian systems, which relate to different emotions. So I am so happy to hear what you're saying. In other words,
there are people that teach a self-emotional or eye movement desensitization and reprocessing technique, which they say, you know, give yourself the butterfly hug where you cross your arms.
Oh, that's it.
You're tapping on your upper arm, first left and right, left and right. It's like giving yourself a hug, but you're tapping.
Yep.
And as you're doing that, you're thinking about whatever level of upset you have and your ability to release it and heal, even though you don't know how. So that alternating bilateral stimulation is a part of the eye movement desensitization and reprocessing technique.
Yes.
That's a trauma reduction technique. And some people teach it that you can do that with yourself, for yourself.
Yes, and I feel that does help because I do get a release of stress. Someone was working on me. I was lying on the table, and I did that kind of thing, just touching my opposite legs alternately. I mean, it was intention, right? So who knows what, like you just said, that with you do it, acknowledging that I have the ability to heal. So it's that intention that you mentioned, which is important. Wow.
Well, and that's one of the things that Gary Craig said in his original teachings, is that this is basically when we start talking about the emotional freedom technique. He said, what you'll discover is that we are on the ground floor of a healing high-rise. And as we keep moving up the high-rise, as we keep learning and exploring, he said, intention is probably as important, if not more important, than where you tap. It's the mental intention to release energies, to let them flow, to let the healing energy happen, that's every bit as important as what you say or where you tap. And he said, eventually we'll probably discover that tapping is not even necessary. This is what he said decades ago when he introduced this work.
All right. Well,
when I've done this work and I've taught the all-day workshop for EFT tapping, I routinely have a time where I have people sit with their hands in their laps, have them pick an issue they want to tap on and rate how upset they are with it, and just visualize tapping while their hands stay in their laps as I talk about tapping on the top of the head, tapping over the eye, tapping on the side of the eye, tapping under the eye. And they breathe and soften, and they're just listening to me, and they're not moving their hands or tapping anywhere on their body, but they're thinking about it, and then they rate their upset level. And almost unanimously, people get a dramatic shift for the better in their upset levels, even though all they're doing is visualizing the tapping. They haven't even touched any point on their body.
Wow.
So I will mute you so you can listen to the second hour. Thank you so much for your comments and questions. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. It is. It's good to be back.
You're welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. Appreciate you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio, and today is Tuesday, September the 3rd, 2024, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And the reason we were off yesterday is, of course, we had Aria again. We had her basically for the last week. And we would take her for a couple of hours every day to visit her mom and dad in Johnson City, which is about 40 minutes away. But she wasn't allowed to go into the neonatal intensive care unit to see her little brother. Well, everything, Lord is blessed, everything's good, and Lincoln got to come home about 7:30 last night. But we were kind of on standby because we were hoping that he was going to get released, and we didn't know what time of day, and we wanted to make sure we were free to meet them whenever they got back home. And like I said, it ended up being about 7:30 last night. And if you're on their Facebook, and I'm going to put a picture of it on our website too, when we refer to Have You Ever Held a Newborn Child, when Aria got to finally see her new little brother last night, and she's sitting on the couch and he's in her arms, and it's just the sweetest expression on her face. She's just so thrilled with him. And so they are all home and doing well, and thank you everybody for your prayers and your thoughts and sending love and light in their direction. And so actually it was kind of comical last night after we dropped her off and we got to see the baby for a minute, and then we headed back home and we both kind of took a deep breath, and it was like, okay, I'm going to go back and just veg out. Michael's with us now, so I'm going to say welcome, Michael.
Yes, and it was nice to veg out. This little girl is so active. She's got so much going on. It's just nonstop. So, although yesterday morning, what was it, 7:30 before she got up, so she slept in. But she definitely keeps us going right until the last eyelid is closed.
And you have done a wonderful job the last two nights getting her to close those eyelids.
She wants to take it all in. Pretty exciting, pretty sweet. And then seeing her hold her new baby brother, her excitement and... oh, it's going to be fun. I just wish I could, and I don't know whether it's happened or not. I don't know if you asked the question, but I wish I could be a fly on the wall for the first diaper change, and the questions that are going to follow up from that. It would be fun to be listening to that conversation with Mom and Dad. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything happening in the chat room? Welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. We definitely have had an interesting week with Lincoln being in hospital 40 minutes away and back and forth with Ari to meet with Mom and Dad every day. And just all of those dynamics have been, it's been an interesting and busy time. If you're out there in listener land, our calling number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you're listening to the show directly. And if you have a question, you push 1. We'll be having a conversation, and it would be a delight to have a conversation. So do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up, sweetie, or anything happening in the chat room?
It is all quiet on this end. So welcome, everybody, and press 1 if you have a comment or question.
For sure. And give me a moment to get to my notes on our latest conversation, because I was thinking we were going to have somebody with a hand up. And for some reason, my note program is being rather stubborn, not wanting to move the way that it should be. There we are. So our conversation last in the system we were going through, we were talking about how Yeshua, who, contrary to so many people supposedly teaching his work say there's nothing you can do. We hear Yeshua in Luke 6:46 saying, "And why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not do the things which I say?" And of course, we hear many in the religious arena today that say, well, there's just nothing you can do anyway. Well, clearly there's a conflict between that statement and Yeshua, because he's asking people this question. And those who would tell us there's nothing we can do anyway are those who would reinforce weakness and helplessness and force us into a mind we're not designed to live from. And the only reason I can imagine somebody doing that is because they don't know that there is another mind to live from, and that Yeshua was teaching us to return to true mind, the mind we were designed to live in. And we hear the statement made in, Timothy 2:7, "For God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." And this isn't theology. This isn't religious. The truth is, where we live in our world, in our relationships, in our finances, in our businesses, in our communities, we are designed to live out of a mind of love, literally a mind connected to the active presence of love. And it is this quote-unquote spirit of fear that's implanted oftentimes, or pardon me, only implanted, only engaged in by those who have not resolved their own fears. So this has become such a widespread disorder that so many do nothing but preach from this state of fear. Now, of course, there are many who are on the other side of the world, at the other side of the game, doing things differently, really, truly. What does it take to live as the presence of love? What are some of the expressions of that presence of love? But those who have not resolved belief in themselves that weakness and helpless and hopeless and sinner are our given states preach this fear, and by doing so push people into denial of the mind that the Creator has given us from the beginning. That was the mind Yeshua was dealing with 2,000 years ago. In John 6:26, and you'll remember we started this conversation out of a question that was, well, from the scriptures, where can we follow this path of healing? How does it unfold? So the alternative to doing one's work is having one's needs met. Care my needs, and you're going to be my guru. You can fill my hand, you can fill my belly, and that's exactly what Yeshua was dealing with. In John 6:26, he says, he answers, he says, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, you seek me not because you saw the miracles, but because you ate the loaves and were filled." In other words, you're just looking for your own self-centered needs. And in essence, this is the mind that says you're a hopeless, helpless sinner, and there's nothing you can do anyway. The person who believes that, or the person who preaches that, preaches it because that's the mind they live in. So Yeshua is saying to them, why don't you follow what I told you to do? Because you want your problems fixed by me. You have no desire to follow my instructions, no desire to learn what I'm offering, no desire to change, to do the work I've instructed you to do. Now, some will lie to you and tell you that you're hopeless and there's nothing you can do, but that's not what Yeshua taught. Until one has personal experience, person experienced with the mind of love in them, they will tend to push attack, condemnation, guilt, sin, fear, because they've never put their own hand to the plow and have no idea how to support people getting back to the natural mind of love, the mind we were given with in the beginning. I mean, if one knows that that's true, why would one ever speak of fear? What reason would there be to push fear and terrorism? I was actually just processing with someone just before the show, a young man who has been searching and searching and searching, and he came out of a church. He shared that he had this memory that haunted him all his life, of being 5 years of age, being brought up in a church that preached hellfire and brimstone, and he has this remembrance, and he can't tell his parents at five. He can't tell his parents because it will mean, in his five-year-old mind, it will mean that he's being possessed by the devil, the devil's in him. That's what this kid believed at five. And he's got this terrorist dream of, he's in this flaming, he wakes up and it's fiery and flaming, and there's the devil out to get him. But at five, he can't tell his parents because they'll believe that he's possessed by the devil. I mean, how insane does it get? And those who have not had that personal experience, personally experienced, he again addresses them in Matthew 7:22. He says, many of you will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name? Have we not cast out devils in thy name and done wonderful works? And then I will profess unto them that I knew you not. I never knew you. Depart from me, you that work iniquity. If one is still functioning out of fear, anger, attack, still judging and blaming, stop pretending that you've done the forgiveness work that Yeshua told you to do. All hypocrites must be converted back to the mind of love, the one they were born with, the one each of us was born with, to actually know what Yeshua was teaching. I remember back about, this goes back 30 or so years ago, there was a man who was a fundamentalist preacher who contacted me and wanted to use a page out of the Kabbalist manuscript as a cover for a book he was writing. I was like, well, that's interesting. And he told me a story. He said, I, for 50 years, was a hellfire and brimstone fundamentalist preacher. And last year, I had a breakdown, a mental breakdown. And he said, you know, my favorite book has always been the Bible, and I could not even pick it up or look at it for a year. He said I was just totally and completely incapacitated. And then he said one day I was able to pick up it and I started to read it, and it's like, oh my God, this is a book about love, not about fear and helpless, hopeless sinners. And he was writing a book for preachers who were from the church he was from to say, this is not what it's about. And he wanted to use a page of the Kabbalah as the cover of his book. We each have to give up the drugs of the mind, the fear, the hostility, the attack, and actually doing the work of forgiveness so that we can go back to the mind of love that we were designed with. And, of course, one who has not done the work to go back to that mind is going to pretend to be very holy and will shove that holiness down your throat and will want to control you and everybody else and make everybody else as holy as they are. You know, you take a look at it today, it's expressing in the world as Christian nationalism. Put the words Christian in small letters with big quotes around it because there's nothing Christian about it. But that's the mind who's engaged in that book and hasn't learned yet how to return to the mind they were given in the beginning, the mind of love. Yesterday when Arya first met Lincoln, who, I don't know, did you share that, Jeannie, that she's calling him Linky? That's his name. I'm sure that'll be the nickname that sticks. But she sat on the couch and they put him on her lap and took a picture. And we were talking, you know, Jeannie, you come in and shown it to me, I hadn't seen it. And we were talking about, oh, that's the one we need to put on the page of the website where we talk about holding a newborn child and going to the direct experience of active love. So once one starts to function out of the mind of love, finds the mind of love in them, then begins the work. Because unless you started out in life with that mind, unless you have a genetic heritage that knew that that was the mind to function from and supported you functioning that from day one, there's going to be a whole lot of work to be done to clean up the generational patterns. Intellectual assent, cerebral knowledge called faith, without having the tools and doing the work that Yeshua prescribed for healing, And sadly, most of it's lost in translation, avoidance, and deceit, leaves one fruitless. You know, they ask Yeshua, how do we tell where somebody's at? He said, just look at their fruit. Look at the results they produce. If one is lost in some kind of generational babble, a desert where until the old mindsets are worked through or forgiven, one remains lost or dead to the truth of how to actually forgive the inherited generational patterns that need to be faced and healed, so that one arrives at a place in their lives where they function purely from love, and if something else comes up, they're aware, oh, well, this is something other than love. It's just a piece of work for me to do, rather than having to revert back to the standard of this culture, which is the being a card-carrying member of the One World Universal Religion of Blame, that it's all somebody else's fault. Again, referring to the path to healing, Matthew 16:24, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. What does this denial of self mean? Remember, there's another passage where he says, in order for you to live, you've got to die. There is a self that is not true. That self is a product of perception, is a product of false ideas, generationally implanted and environmentally reinforced, till we think that this picture in our mind is who we are, that this body is who and what we are. And so one needs to deny that self. And you'll notice he doesn't say, take up my cross. You see people on Easter, you know, I've seen it in many cities over the years. And there are people out there, they've built this wooden cross, and they're out there dragging it and singing about this old wooden cross of Yeshua. In order to avoid taking up their own cross, Yeshua's instruction is, you take up your cross. And what does that mean? Whatever it is in your unconscious mind that keeps you from functioning out of the mind you were given, the mind of love, that's your cross. That's the work you must do. And, of course, isn't it wonderful that life is so relentless in fulfilling its purpose? And its purpose is to give you every opportunity you need to learn forgiveness. That every circumstance, until you leave the world of denial, and remember our definition of denial is when I think or speak, oh, look at what they're doing, that disturbs me. No, what they're doing has never disturbed me, but if there's disturbance in me, any they in the world can come along and trigger it. And if I live in denial, I pretend that they're the cause of my disturbance and upset. And I want to have a conversation about fixing them, rather than, I'm in disturbance and upset. I need to have a conversation with me about fixing me. So Yeshua, in effect, is saying, you know, it's not about my cross. It's not about leaving the work I offered you untouched. That's the mark of a hypocrite. And then in Luke 11:46, he says, woe unto you also, you lawyers, you preachers laden and threaten and load men with burdens grievous to be borne, and ye yourselves don't touch the burdens with one of your fingers. There's a work to be done. And when he told them what that work was that needed to be done, you know, in essence, they ask Yeshua on this particular occasion, well, what do we need to do to, you know, make the Creator happy? And he tells them. He tells them using an idiom. The words he uses, you must eat my body and drink my blood. And people think, well, you know, today that would, to most people, mean, oh, take communion. Well, what's the big deal? Why is taking communion so hard? Because what that request is followed up with is many of his disciples, when they heard that instruction, said, this is a hard saying. Who can hear it? And from that time, many of his disciples went back and walked with him no more. They left. They disappeared. Because he said, take communion? No, he didn't say take communion. He used an Aramaic idiom. Eat my body and drink my blood. It's got nothing to do with wine and wafers. Eat my body and drink my blood is an Aramaic idiom that says you are going to have to fully inculcate the teaching that I'm giving you and emulate the state of active present love that I'm demonstrating for you. What did the larger number of disciples say when they heard that? I'm out of here. Too hard a saying. They left. Actually, facing Yeshua and doing the work he prescribed is at first confounding to the mind based in and trained to respond from the experience of fear, hostility, and attack. Most, when invited into that depth of transformation, attack, turn and run, or make up a face false dogma based in fear and hostility, and there, in that action, they transform the creator, the active presence of love, into an attacking, wrathful deity that people are supposed to be terrified of. And my offering is that the Old Testament is that resistance laid out in all of its permutations and dynamics of horror, and it's a world most of us were brought into. And notice there was a warning that was given in Romans. Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And notice we have people in this world today whose job it is to make sure you're transformed, or pardon me, to make sure you're conformed to this world. So Yeshua brought precise tools for correction and healing, and unhealed minds instead attack, sometimes subtly, and they chronically interpret Yeshua's teachings through fear, hostility, hellfire, and damnation, insisting there's nothing you can do, and that, you know, once again, fear is the beginning of wisdom. All of this is a false projection from fear-based minds, wolves in sheep's clothing. The supposed wrathful deity, when seen through the eyes and the ears of eternal truth and a mind fueled by love, is experienced as our Father who is love. When you experience the Creator as that, your human life begins. One experiencing the Creator as something other than that does not yet have a human life, and therefore their human lives are not reflected in their perceptual constructs. Their non-human generational dynamics are what reflect as their perceptual constructs. In John 14, he says, if you believe what I'm telling, if you'll integrate, believe, put to work what I'm telling you, the works that I do, you'll do, and greater works than these. But you got to be living as that teaching. And of course, there's that situation which we've talked about many times where Peter is going to protect him outside of Gethsemane, and he turns to Peter directly. He warns Peter that his form of attack is the thing that will result in his own death. And John tells him, he says, no one takes my life from me. I choose to give it up. And there's a work required for this healing. You know, and the what are interpreted, and it's interesting that the words are left in, and it says right there in the text, left in the original Aramaic. Duh, the original was Aramaic, folks. Now, there are thousands who will swear, no, it was Greek. Well, why did the Greek text say, we left these words, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, in the original Aramaic? Because the original was Aramaic. And the words do not say, as the Greeks translated, out of the fear-based mind. And you just look at the whole belief system starts to crumble here. Here we've got, in the Greek mythology, God hanging on a cross saying to God, why have you forsaken me? My God, why have you forsaken me? I mean, how ridiculous can you get? How conflicted can you get? Those words in Aramaic, first of all, the greeting was not, my God, as some kind of distant something. It was more like Papa, Papa, and it was said with excitement and enthusiasm. It was said in an embracing tone. Ah, I got it. For this you set me aside. He understood what his mission was at that moment and embraced it fully. Oh, I got it. So the word forsaken, as the Greeks translate it, is similar to the Aramaic word and set aside for a special purpose. So Yeshua says, oh, Father, Father, Papa, Papa, you set me aside. I see what the thing is now. I see it. So when you realize that what you're looking for cannot be known, it can only be experienced, looking through the eyes of the self that isn't, the one that he said, in order for you to live, you've got to die, based in fear, hostility, the self that exists only as a projected image from the mind, when that self renders understanding, the direct experience of life as love is impossible. Actual healing is about the recognition that what you're looking for is what is looking and can only be experienced by learning to look through the senses of the self that is. And it's not an intellectual process. Carl Jung, this is a powerful point to make here. He says, as understanding deepens, the further it is removed from knowledge. So it isn't knowing in any intellectual sense, in any rational, understandable way. We can talk about the tools in a rational, understandable way, but the experience is ultimately impossible to put into words. Parables were used. Remember, in Aramaic, the word parable means parallel meaning. You lay something down that people know or think they know, and alongside of it, you put the deeper meaning. And people have an opportunity through that parable to go, oh, I'm not sure how to put that into words, but I got it. So the truth cannot be known. It can only be experienced. And then once it's experienced, the mind's going to make some kind of a feeble attempt to try to explain the experience. That's one of the reasons I think we've got some 32,000 different sects of so-called Christianity. And my offering would be that the reason the attempt to explain it is so feeble is because the experience is so enormous, so profound that the mind can't contain it, can't comprehend it, or even conceive of it. You know, they spoke of that experience as the eye has not seen nor the ear heard, neither has it entered into the heart of man. So we'll reduce it to puny words that have no shadow of what the real experience is, but if one will take the tools, and this is something that can be done with words, the tools can be described accurately, and if one uses the tools and has support in using the tools, then they'll make the changes and they'll have the experience themselves. So from where I sit, the best definition of love that I've found, and this came to me as I was doing a still point session several years ago, is that life is love flowing through a cell. Now, trying to explain the magnificence called life instead of living the experience of it, trying to figure it out is like trying to put an 8-foot 2x4 and the 8 inches between your ears. It's attempting to put the universe into a walnut. The mind must be laid aside for the experience to unfold, and that's exactly what happens with forgiveness. So first century Aramaic forgiveness shows precisely how to put the mind aside so that correction, love, can do in your form the work of healing and transformation. In each space where you're going, oh, I have to know, what, help. That's where you apply forgiveness and you come free of the past to the experience, and the experience feeds you. Course in Miracles says it really well. Has come to the Creator empty-handed. I actually think it means empty-headed. Out of your mind. Between your ears, the walnut is just a container. For most, it's tainted, it's diseased by so many forms of fear and hostility. Childhood mistreatment, generational and cultural pain and assaults, grief, rage, hatred, self-deprecation, confusion, and vengeance live unresolved in the minds, nervous systems, and the bodies of most people. Remove what's in the container that blocks the experience of self as love. Correct what is in the walnut that covers over the experience, and you get to show up in your own life. The mind is looking for the correction, but when the false you, the one that Yeshua said, in order for you to live, you've got to die, gets out of the way, then you experience the fact that you are the correction. And when you live from that correction, that is the act of being the presence of love. Fulfillment is automatic. Rumi, the 13th century Sufi poet, said it this way: love is the cure. Your pain will give birth to more pain until your eyes exhale love as effortlessly, as your body yields its scent. And we're at about the halfway point, so I'm just going to check in with Miss Jeannie. And see, sweetie, if you have anyone in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room.
It is all quiet. We've got 26 minutes. If you have a comment or question, please press 1. If you're on another channel where we can't see you on the switchboard, dial in to 563-999-3581 and press 1 to talk.
So what's the work required for healing? If I'm frustrated, angry, annoyed, afraid, lonely, have an aversion to something, responding out of my wounds, blaming others, blaming myself, unable to hold to the mind of love in me, that's an opportunity for me to heal the pain constructs of my own mind, body, and nervous system. This great tune, check it out on YouTube. Alanis Morissette, her song called Madness. And basically the words are, the melody line is, the madness in me comes out in the presence of you. I need to be thanking you because I realize now that the madness is still there when you leave the room. Oh, got it. There's a lady who's done her work. The madness in me comes out in the presence of you. I should thank you. Thank you for this bird's eye view. Thank you. So sadly, if I hold unresolved pain or trauma within, it's easy to put the underlying energies of that trauma into my brain's internally constructed perceptual images of others, pretending that they're the cause. In this way, my mind's trauma or pain-based interpretation of events, it appears to be the truth, and that directly leads away from understanding what's really going on. And of course, we can bring in the title of my book here, For What's Going On Again. So many, if not all of our wounds, and therefore our pain, are rooted in genetically inherited traumas. Literally, multi-generational assaults reinforced through unconscious actions, generation after generation, stored and repeated ad nauseum. Each pain perception appears to be different, but all are based on that hidden dissociated trauma that, when activated, obscures the subtle but permanently available experience of ourselves as our true nature, which is love. And those, the blocks to the awareness of ourselves as love, are never imposed from the outside. They're always internal, and they're removable. They're forgivable. They're the things that need to be forgiven. Of course, they can be forgiven if one has the technology to do so. Sadly, most people don't hang around long enough to gather, really understand, and or have the willingness to truly apply that technology and face what needs to be faced. So all healing, to return to love, is an inside job, and all perception is autobiographical. The constructs of our minds tell us, first and foremost, what's going on inside of us. Until generational traumas are removed, we're easily tricked into believing the false pictures and perceptions generated by our minds. And as long as we believe that something outside of us is the cause, rather than just the trigger of what's moving within, we inhabit a world of lies. Do not come from seeing something. They come from internally generated energies, all self-imposed. Blamers, those who talk, think, speak about what's going on outside of them when pain is moving inside of them, would do well to understand denial. Denial is the act of thinking or speaking as though something outside of oneself is the cause of what's moving on the inside. The act of denial results in instant dissociation, hiding the truth, which blocks the awareness of one's own internal dynamics. And this act of denial results in a totally and completely unnatural condition for a human being. That is an unconscious mind. And if you listen to the psychiatrists and the psychologists today, they'll tell you that for most people, 80, 90, 95, perhaps as much as 98% of their so-called thinking is unconscious. That's a pretty big database to work through. If every pain circumstance leaves us in conversations about what happened out there, rather than conversations about what's going on in here. Carl Jung, describing the source of this unconsciousness and the seemingly unavoidable repeat of painful experiences, explains that recurrent trauma, until resolved by the action of changing old familial habits of mind, are always under the surface, ready to distort our experience of both ourselves and of life. Here's how he says it. Whatever is rejected from the self, denial, appears through blame in the world called perception as an event. We meet ourselves and our projections on others time and again in a thousand disguises on the path of life. Until the unconscious becomes conscious, it will direct our lives, and we will call it fate. He goes on to say, everything that appears to irritate us about others can lead to understanding oneself. So it's time to put an end to the multi-generational fantasy of victimhood that many people swear is true. When you listen today and we hear some of the supposedly most powerful people in the country or the world telling us over and 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 over again how much of a victim they are and how everybody victimizes them. And those folks have no idea that they're telling us their life story and the projection of the way they victimize others. Being through a particular painful reality 87 different times with 42 different people, one sooner or later has to stop and go, I'm the one who was there every time. But the mind's echo of denial sounds more like, you make me so, give it whatever it is, mad, sad, hurt, afraid. The very things that people don't want to look at or deal with are the things that are most urgent to look at and be dealt with. And rest assured, life will give you every opportunity you need. Why? Why does life do that? Guess what? Guess who's directing the show? You are. Probably the greatest atrocity, you've heard me say this 1,000 times, that's been done to us and that we bought into, is if we had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. We are unconsciously directing our own show. And life's purpose, when we dissociate from pain, is to kick us right square in the limitation, to show us what we're holding on to. So how do you make the unconscious conscious? If Carl Jung's correct, how do you do that? Well, I only know one teacher in all of the different modalities that I've studied in the last half century. I've looked at all of them. I've traveled all over the world looking. How do you make the unconscious conscious? How do you reliably open what in the ancient teachings was called the veil of the temple? And the temple is your own body-mind unit. That's the temple they were talking about. It wasn't about a purple curtain in a church. And that veil is the place where we keep our pain hidden, the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious mind. The technology for removing, for opening that veil and removing that assault energy appeared 2,000 years ago in the Aramaic language. And nobody wants to go there because that means they have to look. And you look at how powerfully the world is connected to the phrase, don't make me look. You watch people's hackles go up over a simple sentence that somebody says. And what they're saying when their hackles go up is, don't make me look. And what do they do when someone says a simple phrase that forces them to look, that resonates something that's hidden? What do? They hold their breath, and they have a conversation about what's going on out there. We're looking to reverse that habit. The ancient tool of forgiveness is a process that uncovers and removes what we've hidden through denial within ourselves. Fake Greek substitute pardoning changed forgiveness from an internal act to an outer directed act. The Greeks, forgive, let them off the hook. That's what we've been told. And with that errant directive, the simple, effective healing technology of forgiveness, literally, for thousands of years has been lost to humanity. In the Greek misinterpretation, we're convinced we need to be forgiven for something rather than realizing there is something to be forgiven from our minds, that is, removed from our minds. Nothing to do with being let off the hook. So this slippery twist has left millions letting others off the hook for what's generated by their own minds rather than taking responsibility and removing from their minds the projected and hidden, oftentimes generational content that is locked within themselves. So letting someone else off the hook for what's going on inside of us will never rid us of the experience of our own internally generated hurt, upset, or pain. It will only reinforce the energy that covers over the awareness of who we are. Outer directed acts do not bring correction to internally generated dynamics. Engaging in actual forgiveness creates a visceral opening that facilitates the flow of love and light into every instant, every experience of our lives, and every cell in our physiology. Whatever the dynamic is, alone or lonely, afraid or sad, rageful or hateful. Through forgiveness, the space is created for love to flow into a clean and open space within the mind. That's what forgiveness does. It collapses the mind's constructs so there's a clean and open space there. And as a result, there is a transmutation, the removal of the energy behind what causes pain. And give me just a second here. I'm just making a note here. So the objective of this work is to support each and every one of us in confronting whatever generational patterns are within us that create hurt. Lived pain or turmoil is always an invitation to end denial and to learn and apply forgiveness. And I would suggest, even if you watched it before, that you go to our website and find the video link. Actually, if you go to our YouTube channel, go to YouTube and type in Michael Rice, and you'll find our YouTube channel, and then look down the list for the workshop, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? I believe we've got two different versions on the site. I think there's about a two-hour version, and there's a three-hour and 20-minute version. Watch that, and it outlines the whole technology of forgiveness. If you've watched it 100 times, then what I suggest you do is go back and watch it for your 101st time. And the brain cells that you didn't have to hear what I was saying in that workshop last time, because you listened to it last time, you built it, and you watch it, and you'll go, wow. I remember years ago, many of you have heard me speak about Angie. She's an elderly Italian lady that in the early days of doing this work became engaged in the work. And I can remember one particular workshop that she came to, and it's like, well, Michael, why didn't you say that in that the other workshops, why isn't that idea in the video? It's like, Angie, it's there, I promise you. But if you don't have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, it's not there. If the brain cells aren't there to recognize it, then the mind can't generate realities based in it. So I suggest you give a listen to Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Or you can go to our website. Go to whyagain.org/book, whyagain.org/book, and the book is there free to download in at least 9 languages. We can't sell you one. It's out of print, unfortunately. You can usually find rather inexpensive copies of the book on either eBay or in Amazon. Fortunately, way back, you know, the book was published almost 30 years ago now, but when it was in print, we sold enough copies that it's still hanging around 30 years later, available on both Amazon. Actually, I buy quite a few copies every year to give away. So go to Amazon and look for Why Is This Happening to Me Again. Go to eBay and you'll find the book there. So the bottom line is that, well, actually, the bottom line is that it's 10 minutes to completion. It's 1:50. And so in case we've aroused any questions, I'm going to just check with Jeannie, sweetie, and see if there's anybody out there with a hand up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room.
It's all quiet still, and we have 9 minutes. Mm-hmm.
So if you're out there in listener land, I can only imagine that some of what I've said is perhaps aroused some questions for you. So this is a space for it. And if you are on one of those stations where we can't see you, if you dial our direct listening number.
You have a hand up.
Okay. Let's go for it.
I don't recognize the number, but it's area code 904. You're on the air.
Aloha.
Welcome, 904. Give us a name. Where are you calling from? Dusty.
You remember Dusty, right?
I remember Dusty. How you being,
yeah,
sir?
Well, I'm doing well this morning. I missed your show. I got a call from a friend in the home for people with dementia, and that was a long phone call. And so, but it's a good friend that I care about. And so I suspect that you mentioned your sweet grandchild, Lincoln Elijah.
Elias
on the show?
We did.
Uh-huh. Well, I wanted to be there for there because I wanted to tell the whole world maybe the best phone message I ever got. It was all of 7 seconds. Was you two higher than a kite, and the whole thing was like a and you two together were
cute.
So cute. and you were so high on that you'd held your grandchild.
We
and I saved that message. It was that beautiful. It sparkled. So I am so glad for you, and I hope that the Lincoln light persists in wonderfulness for, you know, his whole life.
Well, we were both sparkling, having just come out of neonatal ICU and holding him for the first time, meeting him for the first time. That was when we called you. And, yes he's rocking and home.
Oh, yes.
He's out of
I'm
ICU
so...
and home.
Oh.
Yeah.
I am so glad. And so it's kind of the natural way of going from here on, right? I mean, he doesn't have to drink it. Yeah, okay. You're good. I am so glad. I'm glad for all of you. Honest to goodness, it lights me up when I just even think of the tones in your voices and the overall. It's like a silver light that was short. And you guys, you would think that you two did a live radio together a lot, but judging by the phone call, because it was all so, but there was no wasted space. And I really appreciated it. It was like a shot in the arm.
Well, we were concerned about you and wanted to check out and make sure you were doing okay. And we're delighted that you are.
Well, yeah.
That you're on the other side of that challenge.
I'm holding, no, I'm not on the other side of it, but I'm holding my own. That's what I'm doing, and I'm taking the right stuff. But I just still haven't been able to get the intramuscular injection of antibiotics. And except for that, no problem. So
just sent you the picture that we took last night with Aria holding him.
Oh yes. Oh, that's perfect. Because I kind of wanted to see a picture of Aria, too. So, yay. Thank you very much. I like that. And I'll let you know. And did you send
you get pictures by text on your phone?
No. Email.
Okay. So, Jeannie, we need to send it via email.
Yeah. Then I'll get a nice, big, clear picture. All right, you guys. Well, I'm sorry I missed your presentation here today, but life.
Well, in
good,
just a
huh?
few minutes, it'll be available in the archives. We've been talking about the whole process of healing. Someone last week had asked me about more of the scriptural ideas in healing, so we've been going over a few scriptural quotes that relate to how the work developed and what it takes to enter into that true human state of being love, functioning as a human being.
Yes, I'm sure you did. And I am reminded hearing you say that in my meditation about 3 days ago, just the word and the feeling and the oomph that's really potentially that is behind it, the word blessing. That's it, that word, blessing. And it's almost like I can enter into that or be that, or it's just all I have to do is remember that this, all this is a blessing. The fact that we can even still talk and walk, you know, all this and everything that's around, it's a blessing, and it's a really good positive anchor point. And I don't know if that's...
Well, the fact exactly. that we get to have a human life is pretty awesome. And the picture Jeannie yeah. sent you is the first picture of Arya with Lincoln.
Ooh.
We had just gotten to the house. You know, she was with us yesterday, and they brought the baby home, so they were home. We went in, and they sat her up on the couch and put Lincoln on her lap. So that picture, you've got both of those beaming, shining faces. And she
is so excited.
She's calling him. She's made up her own nickname. She's calling him Linky.
Linky. Oh, my God. Linky.
And I'm sure that's a nickname that's going to stick. That will be her name for him, I'm sure, forever.
Oh, yeah. He's going to love that when he gets older. Hey, Linky. Yeah. Hey, Chinky Linky. Oh. Okay. Well, listen, I love you guys. And anybody listening, blessings for all. I need to shag here.
All right, my friend. You have a blessed one.
Appreciate all right, you too. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right.
We have two minutes.
So do we have anybody out there in listener land that has a two-minute comment for us? Otherwise, let's just join in taking a deep breath together. Allow that breath to move through your whole physiology, through to your arms, your hands, down through your torso, through your back, to your feet, your legs. Just feel the impact of that breath as you breathe in. Allow yourself to be aware of how that breath enters through your whole structure. Be deeply sensitive to the energy moving in you as you take a breath. And then let's just step into deep appreciation for this ability to breathe, for this ability to experience our human lives, and for our ability to be able to extend presence of love, our human lives, out into the world. Joining each and every one of you in creating the best year yet of your eternal life. It's a delight to have this time to share with you. Blessings. Bye-bye.